Welcome to the Revenue Lounge, a podcast for revenue operations professionals who want to understand the various facets of this important go-to-market function. In each episode, the team at Nectar interviews revenue warriors on how they are reimagining revenue operations in creative and disruptive ways, and what are their secrets to building a scalable and predictable revenue engine. Let's get started.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Revenue Lounge. I'm your host, Randy Likas, and today we are going to talk about the framework for a 30, 60, 90-day guide to building a high-impact RevOps engine. Joining me today is Hassan Irshad, who is the Director of RevOps at FEV Tutor. He has almost 10 years of revenue operations experience at SaaS companies of various sizes, and also consults with his own company with other organizations to unlock the potential of their revenue teams. Hassan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Pleasure to be here.
Great. So let's start and talk a little bit about, just get to know you a little bit. We had a chance to meet personally last week. I really enjoyed that conversation. But for our audience here, can you tell us a little bit about how you got into your current role, how you got into RevOps, and some of the responsibilities that you have at FEV Tutor today?
Absolutely. Yeah. So as you mentioned, I've been in revenue operations for almost 10 years, which is as much as the length of revenue operations. But yes, out of college, so I graduated in economics. That was my general background, did actually political economy as well. And then I started working in sales operations at a startup, which is a lot of times like a very natural progression towards revenue operations. But this is what I say always, is like sales operation at a startup was revenue operations because there was no person to do CX ops. There was no person to do marketing ops. So what do you call wearing different hats on different days? So that was a very natural progression for me to work into those. And the company that I worked with had this amazing program to start with. Is they make everybody who join a revenue org or sales org do 1 month of BDR work. So I went through a little bit of that BDR grind and gained a lot of respect for what sales does. And from there onwards, I had the love of working with sales operations and working with marketing and CX teams, trying to solve a lot of those problems. And problem solving was at the heart of what I really enjoyed. From there onwards, the rest is history. In the past decade, I've worked with, this is my fifth organization, building out revenue operations from ground up in a B2B SaaS space particularly. So yeah, it's been very enjoyable, right? And happy to dive in.
So what does revenue operations encapsulate for at FEV today? Is it marketing, sales, CS, or is it one area? Maybe a little bit more in terms of what revenue operations means for FEV.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, revenue operations at FEV is sales, marketing, CX, which is a very standard revenue operations model if done right. But then I feel like revenue operations is always just a lot more, because you interact with a lot of different other departments that are not really on the book. It's like, hey, you kind of like, this is not part of your job description, but then you work with product very closely. You work with finance very closely. You work with HR very closely, and like onboarding salespeople. So yeah, it's all in all, everything that revenue operations touches is what I'm doing at FEV Tutor, setting up a department from scratch here as well.
Yeah. Do you have a large team or individual, or what does the organization look like at RevOps?
Yeah, I have a team of two people right now, and I'm hiring a third person. So in the world of revenue operations, relatively medium size, I would say.
Yeah. And for those that might not know what FEV Tutor does, do you maybe want to talk a little bit about what business you're in, and maybe also what are your sales cycles look like? Who do you sell to? Yeah. That type of thing.
Absolutely. I can. So I've in my career, I've worked with various different business models. And I would say this is a very unique one. So what FEV Tutor does is high impact online tutoring for students who are lagging in public schools in the US. So let's say if you have a district that doesn't have enough funding and you have students that are kind of lagging behind, they don't have enough resources, FEV Tutor kind of jumps in with the high impact tutoring that you can do online. The business exploded in COVID, of course, for online tutoring. So there's a lot of positive impact that they're generating, but the selling actually happens to public schools, which means to government. So the sales cycle tend to be relatively longer and more political. But I think that to me was a very interesting challenge to kind of like solve revenue operations in this world.
Yeah. And I have a little bit of experience selling to organizations that sell to public schools. And I understand like the the sales cycle and buying season is a very defined moment, right? And so maybe talk a little bit about that. Like your sales reps, do you guys have BDRs that support the sales reps, or sales reps responsible for all pipeline generation?
Correct. Yeah. So we have BDRs that support the AEs, and then we have a larger team of CSMs that take care of renewal, but the AEs are generally in charge of new business and renewals, because it's a lot of like relationship building in this. And I'm sure you have the experience for that as well, right? There's a lot of networking that actually goes in, and a lot of familiar faces that you see again and again to have those renewals and everything done. So it's still, I would say, a decent size go-to-market team. And yeah, the very general structure for BDRs helping the AEs there.
And when you think about the buyers and the people that the reps need to interact with, it could be anything from school boards, superintendents, even down to the principal level, if I'm correct, right?
Correct. So it's a very interesting market where within COVID, they had basically district level fundings. And then, yeah, superintendent has the budget. So it is like who holds the budget, basically, at the end of the day, who's the decision maker. But then when decentralization of these budgets happen, then, yeah, principals and who's the head of schools who have the power to make that decision. Like just so we have like all over the place. So it's very interesting, because your buyer personas kind of differ by district to site level schools.
Yeah, yeah. And I imagine there's also probably a lot of things going on, regulatory or other things that are, you know, laws are being passed that also impact the sales process as well, correct?
100%. And I think this is where, like, I personally am a nerd for revenue operations doing this, so I really enjoy it. But then, to your point, there's seasonality. So one of the things I did here, and this is my 60 to 90 happening right now. And what I did was we created a sales calendar and got feedback from all the teams to know where the seasonality actually hits, what is the top priorities. And to your point, how does politics impact? Because that's like funding cycles. And so I started creating a repository of which states have which funds available at what time, and then kind of like collect it together, because that goes into the sales arsenal as like a, hey, I have the background of this, and I can have those conversations with that kind of authority saying, like, I know where you can get the funding for these.
Yeah, great. This is really good context. I guess one other question that I'm just curious about is, do the buyers, whether they be principals or superintendents, whoever they might be, do they move around a lot? Or like the relationships that people develop one year, they might be completely different the next? Or what does that look like?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think this is where it gets even more challenging, where there are superintendents who move around, and there are superintendents or assistant superintendents who get promoted. So all of a sudden, your decision maker has changed immediately. And then there's more, it can get more political, where it's like you have to understand what the superintendent or district superintendent is actually expecting as a next step in career, right? And then you have to anticipate that when you're putting relationship or saying, hey, we're working this specific champion. And all of a sudden, this champion moves. You got to do the backup strategy for that, for sure.
Yeah, great. This is really fascinating. Thanks for providing that context. Let's actually dive into the first component of the 30, 60, 90 plan, mm-hmm. which is the first 30 days. Can you walk us through maybe what that 30-day plan looks like? How do you set it up from a new RevOps department from scratch?
Yes.
And what are some of the immediate priorities in that 30-day plan?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one thing that I would just lay out is like the 30, 60, 90 is more like you have the control over it, right? So it's how you design as a new leader coming into revenue operations. It's your narrative. So the way I see the 30-day, I see it as like most important for this journey. And I have actually names for these. So I would call the 30-day is like your discovery phase. So I take it as like how you're doing sales. You are meeting the key stakeholders, right? Whoever you work with, finance, HR, not only your standard stakeholders. You want to understand where they are, what drives them, what their priorities are, right? What are they looking for as the short-term and the long-term goals, right? Understand their pain points, which is going to dictate how your 60-90 works from there onwards, right? So a lot of, I would say, the discovery work happens there. I create like a document, something I call lay of the land document. And then you just take all the resources that are available. You can have, you want to understand how the product works, because being in four different industries in the past decade, revenue operations core problems remain the same, but you want to make sure you understand how the product is sold. So one of the few things that I do in this discovery phase is take a product demo, like have sit through those. If you have conversational intelligence tools, walk through a demo, listen to the call, listen how the selling is actually happening, because you want to make sure you have all the data points. You're there to help the end user, but there's a gap if you don't know what the end user is selling. And a lot of times I felt like revenue operations can be a little detached from that reality. Yep. So one of the things I do is I dive in and what you call, we become a sponge. You soak it all in, right? You have to understand the pain points that are going to help in terms of layout your plan later. So we do that. Then another thing that I do is just dive in into the CRM and play around myself, right? Mm-hmm. What it allows, again, it's the discovery work. So what you want to do is you want to understand, okay, is it easy for me to just pull a report or a dashboard on some data, or do I need to go through five different hoops to get there? And that just dictates however it was designed or whatever, the ease of the end user. If you were RevOps and you wanted to extract it, said how much work is there pending? That will just tell you immediately. So again, that doesn't even need 30 days. You can do this in the week, right? Yeah. So this kind of analysis just helps. And then what I would do is establish those key relationships with these key stakeholders, right? Because one of the core things that I feel like revenue operations need is that trust between the go-to-market teams and saying, yes, you are here and you're going to help us achieve our goals. And that requires trust. No one's going to come in and say, yeah, all of your system is bad. Let me just remove it, create something new. That doesn't really create the trust building part. So what I try to do is I listen. And listening is a skill I think revenue operations need to have just generally across the board. So what I take is when I'm listening, one of my questions to them is, how can RevOps help you achieve this, right? And that opens up a whole different world where it breaks down the barrier and people are like, okay, this person is here to help me. Let me lay out my problems. And sometimes it could be a lot of problems, right, laid out. So discovery work involves that. One other area that I do is tech stack audit, of course. That's a no-brainer to start with. But then also, as you're talking to the key stakeholders on go-to-market leaders, VP of marketing, VP of sales, you have to be able to go steps beyond that. You need to go further. You need to talk to the end users. You need to talk to the BDRs. You need to talk to the sales. A few things that I do, if it is possible for you to actually go into the office, even if it's remote, I would shadow. I would sit there, I was like, show me how you enter data in CRM, show me how you do a call, show me how you log a call. All of that, I feel like just opens up a different perspective because I'm not then making decisions in a vacuum, mm-hmm. right? So that discovery phase, and you're from sales, that discovery phase requires asking a lot of questions.
Yep.
So I think that's exactly my approach to that is just ask the questions where the pain points are and get to that point, do a kind of spice on them because they're your end customer, right? And then process mapping, figure out how the selling is happening. But if the process has already been mapped, perfect, yeah. Don't reinvent the wheel. But if not, create those documents, have your team create those documents, get the research out, lay it out in a way where you have a process map so you can find where the redundancies are, you can find where the gaps are, and then help them in a much more powerful manner because you can show, hey, if I did this, the impact of this is going to be very immediate. And then I would say, just to close it out, it's all about the quick wins because, like I said, trust building is a key area, and the quick wins allow you to actually build that trust because there's hey, I know you have two books of problems that are low-hanging fruit, and let me just solve that for you. Immediately, you get the trust where hey, this person just allowed me. And this could be from tiny little things, which I have experienced where it says, hey, we are doing this, we get a flow error, but there's no description of the flow error, so we don't know what we're looking at. That could be just how it was positioned in the past. In my discovery work, I learned that. I was like, okay, let me just change and let me just train you on this. And they're like, oh, this just solved me an hour off me figuring out in the CRM system what was going on.
Yep.
So, I think that's important.
So I have a couple of follow-ups before we transition over to 60. So where does, in your discovery process, does the KPI discussion happen? Does it happen early as far as understanding your key internal customers' KPIs and how they're measured and what problems they have to hit those? Or do the KPI conversations come a little bit later after you've got more of a sort of general understanding of kind of what's going on?
Oh, that's a great question. I think the conversations happen when you're meeting the key stakeholders on like getting the lay of the land, right? You want to know what drives them, ask them about their KPIs, right? So that is definitely in the discovery phase, trying to find what motivates you. And KPIs could totally be like not aligning. That's where revenue operations become a need, where departments are actually working in silos, they have different KPIs driving. So I would say when you're doing that, understand what the overall business is focused on, and then make a judgment like further down the line is, are these departments that are have their individual KPIs aligning with this overarching goal of a business? Yep. And you'll notice a lot of times when they hire RevOps, is probably the answer is no, right? That's when they hire RevOps to come in and fix it. Yeah, so I think that KPI discussion happens a little early on, but you do not stop learning about it. Mm-hmm. You keep on asking about those KPIs, because at the end of the day, you want to know what they care about.
Yeah.
And for you to help them. I feel like you're like a doctor. You want to go in, and if you don't ask those questions, you don't know where the pain is, you cannot resolve it.
Yeah. And what about KPIs for the RevOps organization? When are those discussed? And what are some examples of maybe the KPIs that RevOps is measured against?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think those conversations probably, because after the discovery phase, I would say it comes in slightly between the transition of 30-60, okay. Right? Because now you have understood what the company's goals are. You have understood what the department, individual department's goals are. Now you want to also, again, not operate in a vacuum and set up KPIs that don't align with the entire business, right? So you want to make sure you're aligning with that exact like overarching company goal. So I would say, yeah, you start setting up your KPIs accordingly. If you have a team, right, you want to make sure you understand, first of all, strengths and weaknesses of those teams to create certain KPIs internally.
Yep.
Right. I have a process of like, you can always rank projects within, because with revenue operations, I guess it can get like a little tricky on how you actually rank, right? You can, of course, have very clear metrics of saying like revenue increase, conversion rates go up, win rate goes up. All of those are very viable, trackable metrics that I would say do. But then there's this qualitative part that nobody talks about, and then you want to quantify it. Whereas you'll find in revenue operations, talking to a lot of people is like, hey, I do a lot of other things that are basically not really like direct number related like that, but that is creating positive impact every day. So the way I do it is I create internal KPIs on how a project was actually executed. And part of this 30-day setup would be, do we have a project management system? Do we have something that, how do we take requests? How do we get back to our stakeholders? How do we summarize this is what we have delivered, right? And all of that, if you have that in place, allows you to create those revenue operations KPIs much easily. It needs to be trackable. Basically, you use the SMART methodology to go towards that.
Yep. And then let's leave CRM out of it for a moment, but you'd mentioned something about the tech stack audit. In that sort of first 30 days, what are the kind of key areas that you focus on there, and how do you identify either inefficiencies or gaps that you might have in your stack?
Absolutely, yeah. So yeah, keeping the CRM out for a second, there's a few things that I've noticed in the trend of revenue operations for the past couple of years is people have a lot of tools, right? And then especially if you're a revenue operations leader who just joined an org and you're an individual contributor, it could be overwhelming. You have like 10 different tools doing 10 different things. I would say take a step back, take the holistic view of what these tools are doing, because it could be someone who predates you purchased because they used it at a previous company. They love that tool. And I've seen those legacy things there, which is not really planned for scale. So one of the things that I do is when I'm auditing it, is I just start creating a map of these tools in a place where it's how much of this is actually integrated with your CRM right now and how much kind of just sits outside. Mm-hmm. And then knowing as revenue operations with years, it's actually the capabilities of these tools, right? So you're like, okay, if outreach, I have, for example, can do three other things, but we are spending XX amount of money on a tool that just does forecasting, can I consolidate something here? And again, I'm not saying the answer is always yes.
Right.
The answer is like you ask those questions
let's
and then you'll get
a conversation about it, right?
Exactly. And you open up, and I'm sure, because part of revenue operations is optimization, right? Optimization in my head is a very simple formula. You reduce cost or you increase performance, right? You increase revenue, reduce cost. So I'm like, okay, where can you actually do that? When you're doing your tech stack audit, one of the key areas would be you want to look at utilization, right? People, if you have seats that nobody actually uses, you have login timestamps, and you see, hey, people are not even logging in. Do you have a use? Again, this will be part of your discovery phase as well, right? Just when you're doing it, you understand, okay, from this stage to this stage, let's say you're assigning a CSM. What tool do you use? Do you have a process for it? How do you assign these people? In what time frame? Do you have an SLA? You ask all these questions, and you'll come, tech starts, basically, you'll notice slipping into these conversations. Right, where, yeah, well, we have something, we use Chili Piper, we do this. You'll get to those conversations as a wider net, but always have the bigger picture here, because this is a discovery phase, and you want to understand how things are used, how they utilize, is there an impact there you can make immediate.
Yep. And so now let's bring the CRM back into the picture, right? Now we've looked at things like utilization and over. How do you then look at CRM as a component of that overall stack? And what are some of the essential elements that you consider when you have these other tools? I don't want to leave the question, so I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the way I see it is like the go-to-market tech stack is an ecosystem, right? And right at the center of that is the CRM. The way I see it is as you start asking teams where their data relies, you'll notice that there could be no single source of truth. And again, it's not a utopia. You can absolutely get to a single source of truth if you put the CRM at the heart of it, and then all the other things are actually supporting it. And if you're using CRM systems like Salesforce or HubSpot, even all integrations are already available there. It's just how you design and how you architect the system. And then bring it all into the same place. That A will also increase your adoption, because people don't really have to leave the system to go other places to find this data. You're in there, and this will allow you to increase the synergy between these tools. So yeah, I would definitely see this as a heart, and then everything else is complementing it, like going a little further down and specializing in something.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so let's transition to then after the first 30 days and after the discovery process, we're going to go into the 30 to 60 or 31 to 60. How do you balance continuing that audit that you're beginning to implement with like new processes and new technologies?
Yeah, absolutely. I think once you do the analysis on the discovery phase, there is a fine balance that you have to keep here, which is like, you do want to, now it's 30 to 60. So there's a certain level of expectation that comes with here from RevOps. It's like, hey, RevOps is going to start producing some things here and start flexing their RevOps muscles to say. So what I would say is keep a fine balance between that exploring phase and like, the impact here. So the way I named the 60 day phase is basically it's alignment and it's control, right? So you want to create alignment between your teams. And again, when we said APIs, are these teams operating in silo? Do they even meet on a regular basis? Do they even talk on a regular basis? Do we talk about as a company goal, like, hey, this is our quarterly metrics that we have to hit across the company for this is this. Are they all actually doing those? That cross collaboration sits at the heart of it. So I think when you are in the 30-60, you want to create that alignment between the teams. You want to be the catalyst for that change if it's not happening too. And that is creating immediate impact, right? But it's also, no one's going to say, no, we don't like collaborating with our teams, right? You move towards that, you find the internal politics, you navigate towards it, or bring them all into the same space. Again, there's going to be like controls after that that you want to put in place. Now that you have learned about priorities, pain points, and other, there's certain controls that you want to put in place that is like, let's say you are working with a marketing team, a sales team, and there's this tiny little things that can, if you add, let's say, a classic example for sales is like, there's close dates. Like people don't manage their closes very well sometimes. And you pull a certain report, you find out how many of these closed days are actually usually, let's say, in the past. You find the problem, have the conversations and interviews with sales, like, is like, why is this happening? Get to the root cause. And sometimes they'll be like, hey, I do this on my spreadsheet, right? It's just not in the CRM. And then in this discovery, you're going to go a little deeper and say, okay, would it be good if I made you a report that you can inline edit that kind of works like a sheet, right? Yeah. Most of the time, we're like, sure, yeah, it's not going to hurt my process. It looks better. I don't have to do double work. You basically justify it by logic and say, I can help you get this better. Again, this the 3060 is a time where I just put a control in place and said, hey, there is something that will stop this bad behavior from happening. But it comes from logic. It comes from the trust I've built in the first 30 days with these people. Yep. And I'm helping them. And that's an immediate impact you start putting in place. So yeah, alignment and control is, I feel like, that. And also, I would say, remove barriers, right? Depending on your org. I've worked on bigger orgs such as ADP and then smaller startups. And there's a lot of like politics sometimes to also navigate, right? Mm-hmm. So I would say, put the controls in place where revenue operations is not like, your hands are not tied. You always find a sponsor in the org. You have my blessing to go fix things, right? Because change is always met with resistance, sorry. And then what you do is you make sure that trust overpowers that, right? Yep. It's like, okay, you have the ability to make people's lives better, then why not?
I'm going to replay this back to make sure I'm capturing it correctly. So it sounds like if you're looking for some indicators of success by that 60-day mark, you're looking for things like, am I improving alignment of the different teams together? That, and if we are, like, that's one indicator of success, right? Am I putting the proper controls in place that are fixing things like bad forecasting processes or procedures? Are we moving the needle there? And are we removing barriers that is preventing us from achieving some things? Would that be accurate to say those are reasonable indicators that your plan that you are putting in place is actually starting to have an impact?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's those, and I would also even add a further layer. There's the standard metrics, like I said, those are very clear indicators, right? I would say in the discovery phase when I'm doing it, I usually find the baseline, right? If you don't have a baseline, it's very hard to give you a measurable impact. Mm-hmm. So if somebody says it takes me this amount of time to do that, okay, that's my baseline. And when I'm making the impact, I can show the win here. I can show the impact. And then you have standard revenue impact. You have conversion rates. You have other things. So I would say those are fair indicators of success with all the other ones that kind of like loop in there as well. Yeah.
So is this also the point where you start thinking about maybe how you evolve the tech stack? So for example, you might identify that a tool that you're currently using is capturing data, but it's not writing it back to Salesforce. And that's preventing some of these barriers we talked about, or we have a gap in our stack that's not meeting that. Is this kind of where you're thinking about evolving what gaps we have, what identifying the gaps, but evolving what tools you might need to purchase in the future?
Absolutely. I think the 3060 is where basically you're starting to give your strategy a design and kind of shape. Right? It's like, okay, now I am well far enough into these problem statements and other things where I can start envisioning like a picture. And again, this is just setting the foundations of that, right? Where do we want to go as a company, as a department, as a go-to-market org, and then start tackling those like eventually. But I would say, yeah, it starts making the shape of your strategy plan on what it's going to be. And we'll dive that deeper into that on the 90-day. Plan for sure.
Let's get tactical for a moment. What are some examples of maybe some creative solutions that you've implemented where you've taken what was before a manual process and automated it for sales, marketing, or customer success?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, a classic example I give is the company I was working before FEB Fundraise Up had a very unique business model. So it was like a B2B sales that did not have contracts. Again, that makes revenue operations a very big question mark. How do you do revenue operations with no contracts in a B2B SaaS space? But one of the core areas that challenge that I was trying to solve there is how do you comp people and how do you actually pay them out and what the system is? And in my discovery phase, I figured out there's no good way that the company was running on. It was more annual. When we went down in analysis and talked to these commission softwares, it was a little complex thing to solve because it's more transactional based. So a lot of those tools were not able to equip. Now a lot of that improvement has happened through these tools. Well, this is a couple of years ago. So one of the things that I solved is we created an in-house commissions app in Salesforce that read every single data point for a customer's revenue for each day into Salesforce in the back end. Mm-hmm. And we were able to create a more custom commissions app. Again, going back to my discovery phase, I learned there was a lot of pain points here. Reps would complain they're not being paid correctly. It was a manual, cumbersome process. There was no clear leader on who was actually managing it. It's like sometimes it's fine and sometimes it's this person. So what I wanted to do is basically move towards a newer world where we had this commission app natively built in Salesforce, again, bringing in the CRM adoption and everything, had those data points fed in, kind of parsing out who gets paid when, and then create that visibility to just close the loop. Everybody had a running dashboard of their commissions on a daily basis that they can pop up and they're like, oh, I know what I'm getting paid, this. And we even created like forecasting of like, if you close your pipe, what are you going to get paid?
Reps a whole lot happier too with that process.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my theory is if you do not see where you can go, you can't control it, right? Yep. So you work in sales. So if you do not know what you're hitting on a daily basis, if you do not know how your quota looks, if you do not know what your payout is going to look like, you're just operating in a vacuum again. And you want to make sure we give the reps. And again, this is not only for sales. You want to do this for marketing. You want to do this for CX because revenue operations has a much wider net.
Yep. Great. Okay. Now let's transition then to the third phase, right? And mm-hmm. as I was thinking about this, it's probably not so much like the days, it's the phases, right? Because you're going to be accomplishing some things ahead of others. But when you get to that 90-day mark, how should the fully operational RevOps department or model look like?
Yeah, absolutely. I think at that 90-day mark, general expectations are like, you have kind of almost set the foundations for your vision. Now, this is the phase I called basically your vision and execution phase. So now the expectation is that you're actually creating a roadmap for RevOps that goes for the next 2 quarters for at least, right? That aligns the priorities of the business, but also you have figured out what are your wins that you need to actually put in place now for this to bear fruit, let's say a quarter, 2 quarters out, right? You're starting to create that roadmap along with the end users, right? Not, again, operating separately. You want to make sure, okay, if I know sales has this thing that needs to be tackled in the next quarter, and that makes sense. Again, a lot of times you'll find departments like, my things are the most important. But you want to make sure you cut through the noise and know, okay, is this going to make, because RevOps is a strategic role, not only just like we're clearing out tickets. So you want to make sure that this is going to generate revenue impact for the business immediately or in the next quarter, or it has a larger purpose for the next 2 quarters that if I put this in place now, let's say I'll go with the simplest example. If you put a field that was not being tracked before, you want to have the next 2 quarters of data to be able to go into third quarter and say, we have the analysis on this,
right?
Yep. But you want to put that in place now. So that dictates your basically map plan. And within this roadmap plan, we talked about tech stack earlier. You want to go further and deeper into that. It's not just changing it, but you want to meet the point of context for all these tools. You want to see what extra support you have available that's going to help you relieve some of this pressure on your roadmap, right? It's like, hey, you have some vendor that does something for you, great. It's lifting something out of my team, taking my work, amazing. Those are good vendors. I want to make sure I double down on those relationships again. So the way I see this phase is like, it brings everything together, but now you're executing, right? Mm-hmm. Now you're like, okay, the plan is there. I'm going to launch it. Again, I'm very mid this phase right now. So publishing a plan for map for the next 2 quarters, and start executing on some of these quick wins that you have identified and celebrate and show the wins. I think a lot of times, again, for the people who have worked in RevOps or SalesOps for long enough would know it has always been a challenge, like previously, to show the impact of revenue operations mm-hmm. or sales operations. Mm-hmm. Over time now, it's something that people focus on more. So people are like, hey, now you have the seat on the strategy table. So it's very different conversations. But it's always good to show your wins. If you make the impact and it's measurable, you have the baseline, what the impact you made, show it. Celebrate it like you say you close a deal.
Yep. I imagine as you're implementing the 90-day plan, you're introducing a lot of change to an organization, right? You're introducing mm-hmm. change that maybe was easy if something is broken and you're going in and fixing it, but there's probably instances in which you're trying to align more senior stakeholders around changing the status quo when maybe mm-hmm. they don't want to change the status quo because they're comfortable with the way that it is. And so mm-hmm. I guess the question is more around how you address the change management component.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And 100% that happens, right? It's like change is difficult, especially if you do not know like what the impact is going to be. So the way I try to do is interviews with these people. Again, if you approach this change as if you were selling a product, right? If you know that this person wants this change in your discovery phase and getting to that point, you're not giving them something they didn't want. If they're like, there's a version 2 and version 3 of something that is going to make their lives better, easier. Again, there are ways you can remove the barriers for this change and then get the stakeholders and senior leaders aligned from day one, right? You're like, okay, I'm going to help you achieve this, is this, but I need a little bit of backing there for your teams. And sit in those meetings with sales, with CX, be the fly on the wall, hear the problems. If you hear the problems and come back with a solution, 9 out of 10 times you would not meet with resistance. And again, it's not like something broken, but there's something that you can improve. There's something that you can show them like, hey, there's a better way of doing these things. Again, it's hard to take change, but I think always be questioning status quo, even if you created the process. Yeah. So yeah, but I hear you. There's definitely resistance that does come in, but there are ways to overcome it.
And it probably also goes back to why I'm looking to create this process to begin with, this function to begin with, right? There's going to be necessary change. And so to what degree do you have to have executive sponsorship that's backing you up on a lot of this change? And how important is that for you to make sure that this that the plan you're putting in place is effective?
No, that's a great point. I think executive sponsorship is very important, right? Because, again, that also is a lever you can pull to remove the barriers for change. So I would say, good thing is, as the trend has changed for revenue operation to sit in those strategic meetings with, you know, all the C-level leaders, I think that allows alignment and get your executive sponsor there that kind of keeps on pushing. It could be anyone. It could be your GTM president who is running the whole org, or it could go to head of sales. They're saying like, hey, I can overcome this. Like, you can find your champion. Again, internally, you're doing the sales process. So you can find your champion.
Right.
And double down on that. You find your detractors and stay away a little. And you're like, okay, now I'm going to implement this. And again, to earlier point, you're not, there is going to be more resistance if you do not hear the pain, if you do not listen.
Why the discovery portion is so important, right? It's amazing. Absolutely. It's amazing the parallels between what you're talking about today and in a well-run sales process, what they look like, right?
It's absolutely. It's that, and even if you were a startup or any other org just launching a product, how do you do, right? If you're doing it well, you listen to your customers.
Yeah.
And all go-to-market is your customer.
Okay, so I've got just a couple more questions, and then mm-hmm. we'll transition to our lightning round here. I know this was about the first 90 days, but help me understand what happens after that, meaning refinement or adjustments mm-hmm. that you need mm-hmm. to make. Because I would imagine you need to have the time and the data to help support the plan that you put in place. So you don't want to change things too quickly, but that you do have to optimize, right? So how do you do that? How do you go about doing that?
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. I think one of the core areas that I think revenue operations and a seasoned revenue operation leader and just instill in your team is don't be reactive, right? Be proactive on those. So that will allow you to say, okay, I launched, for example, going back to my commissions app, we launched a version 1. I am making a roadmap, and down the roadmap, I know that this needs a refresher down the line, right? Where business priorities have changed, comp plans have changed, things have changed. So second quarter, I'm also going to add it into my roadmap as there's a version 2 that needs to be worked on.
Yeah.
Again, versioning is perfect. I think every single process, every single tool you launch, there has to be a continuous improvement in those. Yeah. And that's going back to my economics days. There's a concept by an economist called creative destruction, And this is more like macro level, but I think you can apply it here, where it's like every couple of years, the process that you're going to create is going to overcome, and you can, in a creative way, destroy what you had created in the past, right?
Yep.
Again, all global companies do that. You use any app, it's going to constantly come in with newer versions. You use any software, it's going to come up with versioning for this, because they're listening to you and making continuous improvements in those tools, right? So I would say that never ends. But how you prioritize is like, yeah, you want to make sure that something is like in your roadmap, so you're basically listening to your end user, but then prioritize what's going to actually come in first, because you know what's going to make the most immediate revenue impact for your org, right? And that gets you like other people's trust, and like they become your champion internally. So yeah, I think that's definitely very important.
Yeah. The last question I have is more of an organizational design sort of reporting structure, right? So there's a lot of conversation happening around where should RevOps report, right? Should RevOps report to the CRO, to operations, to finance? And so you've worked at four companies over the last 10 years. Where have you seen it be most effective for where RevOps should report?
Oh, that's a great, it's a hot debate, right? And I have definitely strong opinions on it, because working in revenue operations from internal, to me, it's a very basic reasoning for it. Is you do not report into the same people that you're actually holding accountable for, right? Mm-hmm. And people do it like so wrong sometimes. It's like, hey, revenue operations report into sales. I'm like, is that sales ops? Are you looking at it like totally different lens? This is not revenue operations if you're reporting to one department out of the three departments you serve, right? That's not how any reporting channels should work, because there's conflict of interest. Would you want to show those bad numbers to everyone in your, for your own leaders? Again, you want to make sure revenue operations doesn't have that conflict of interest. So the best revenue operations structures that I've worked with is revenue operations reporting into finance sometimes, and reporting into our reporting as a go-to-market department independently. So you have sales, marketing, customer success, and revenue operations. Mm-hmm. That is sitting on the equal level right there. And I'm holding everyone accountable here. I'm making sure everyone optimizes. I'm listening to everyone's problems and solving those. I think those are the structures where you do not have conflict of interest. That allows operations to sit on those strategic meetings and be a brain trust there. You want to basically use this extra secret sauce that you have in your end versus all the other companies. And you want to make sure you empower them. You don't want to look at it as IT ops. You want to give them the value that they can actually create.
Yeah. Okay. So just out of curiosity, where does RevOps report today at FEV?
Yeah, so FEV, Revenue Operations Report into Chief Customer Officer, that holds sales, customer success, marketing, and revenue operations.
Got it. Yeah. Makes sense. Okay, well, let's transition. And this is more personal. Having the hindsight of the past 10 years of experience working in RevOps, what advice might you give your younger self who is just getting in to help save from the frustrations that you've had over the years?
Yeah, I would say to my younger self, be patient, right? There's a lot of things that are usually thrown at you. And I feel like one of the few things is you have to be patient with all the people you deal with, because a lot of this is people management, right? You have cross collaboration. You want to make sure the patience is going to help you listen. And if you break through that, right, then there's success through this path. And I've learned this over time, right? It's like, okay, now I'm sitting in these meetings and I let the people talk and I'm listening, I'm taking notes. I'm like, okay, and then I'm coming like, where can I help you? Just change the wording on how you approach it. It's like, hey, I can do this and that and let me do this. But no, where do you need my help? Where, because going back to like how you do discovery in sales, you want to ask the right questions. You don't want to tell them what the product is and what's going to solve this and this in your life. No, you want to know what they need. So I think just having that patience when you're dealing with go-to-market teams and be grounded with that.
What's your favorite part of leading revenue operations at your company?
I would say just the constant cross-collaboration with teams is something I enjoy a lot, because what it gives you is, as a whole go-to-market org and a company, it gives you the hawk's eye view that not a lot of departments get. So that keeps your entire every day is fun because it's a different problem you can tackle at different departments. And the connections you make through it, I would say the favorite part is when you solve the problems.
Yeah.
And then you get the gratitude.
Yeah.
I think that's very satisfying.
Now, there's always a flip side to that question, which mm-hmm. is the least favorite, or I often ask it a different way. What's the hardest part of your job?
Yeah, I would say just keeping everything together can be challenging at times, especially over the career. Like now I have a lot of more resources from senior leaders also giving resources to revenue operations. But I've been in those situations where you're an IC, right? You're an IC managing 8 different tools and 3 departments problems. Previously, if you were in sales operations, let's say, or moved, you were doing 1 department at a time. Now you have 3 departments problems thrown at you and everyone's like, solve, solve, solve. So I think what that allows or what that leads into is a little bit of burnout. I think that's something like I would say my least favorite part is at a point as a RevOps leader, you can have 10 meetings a day and you do need time to actually work. But again, if you can take it, I think that's amazing because that's when it unlocks a lot of other things.
Yeah. Now, what about when you're not doing your job? What do you like to do personally and what recharges the batteries?
Yeah, I DJ and I produce music. I produce house music. I live in Brooklyn, so I'm at the Mecca of house music.
Yeah.
So that's definitely something I enjoy. And then to just like get out of the burnout, I travel a lot, go to a different country or check out of all the problems and again, reset. And that allows you to go back to that a lot.
100%. What's the next destination that you've got in mind?
So the next destination I have in mind is probably going to be somewhere in Southeast Asia. Yeah, I've been there before, but I think it says something that I want to refresh.
Yeah, I always say, so I went on my honeymoon, we went to Thailand, and we went to a couple different spots, and I'm like, you have to go back, because there's no way you can cover everything that's there in a week, 2 weeks, right? There's just too much, and so, yeah.
I have to do a revisit on my honeymoon I did last year in Japan.
Japan, I want to go there, yeah, for sure.
You can go over and over again, it's a beautiful country.
What haven't we discussed yet? Or what should I maybe have asked you about that you'd want to share with our audience in terms of being able to build an effective RevOps plan?
Yeah, I would say if I were to just look at it in like 30, 60, 90 again, is something that is in your control, right? You derive it, but I would say publish it, right? Again, have the visibility in the org to get to that point. That's something that I would say is like key. And again, I think we are riding a wave for RevOps right now, which is amazing. There's a lot of like people just asking like, hey, what is RevOps? And getting that limelight. I think now's the time for people to constantly be learning because there's so many things happening. I would say, yeah, I'm forever a student. Yeah. Even if I'm going to be like 60, 70, I'll be learning.
Yeah.
I would say always do that. And again, 30, 60, 90 is subject to change if you find something that can impact. Don't take it as a rigid, here's the 30, 60. It's to what we discussed. It's a phase.
Yeah.
Right? See it as a phase. Again, listen to people, right?
Yeah.
Learn and help improve the next place you go. I've in the past decade worked in, this is my 5th company. The next place I go every single time, I take something new with me. And I'm like, okay, now I'm a collection of so many good ideas. Right. By the time you're doing this again, you have learned something. You have improved something. Again, this is your version. This is your version 2, version 3.
That's right. That's right. Well, this was a really good episode. I think there's a lot of very practical and pragmatic advice that people can take from this. So thank you for sharing your insights and your experience. I had really good time talking with you. We're looking at Friday afternoon right now. So I hope you have a really good weekend.
Yeah, you too.